we're back in Dubai Stars. Today, my star is Mr. Darius, a.k.a. The Gladiator.
AJ, thank you for your invitation.
Thank you for coming on the show. It's been some time we're trying to do this. Thank you. We know your time is too tight, so I'm very pleased to have you today.
Thank you.
Can I discuss about your beginnings? And for the first question I want to ask you, when did you come to Dubai and why Dubai?
Wow, good story. I'm 57.
God bless.
Thank you.
You're and, in your 40s.
Thank you. So it's because I shaved the hair. If I let it grow, you have a white crown all over it. So I'll be Julius Caesar. I was coming to Dubai in the early 2000s on holiday. So I love Dubai.
When there was purest sand.
It was, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think the Hard Rock Cafe was the last building on Sheikh Zayed Road. Actually, used to stay at Sharjah first. That's how, you know. So, and then my sister moved here, 2007. So we kept coming here a lot. And 2009, I got divorced with my first wife. And she met somebody here in the real estate business, funny enough. And she moved to live with him. So I chose to, we agreed that the children, I'll look after them. I was a single dad. Then I met my second wife. So we had another child. So I'm there. The reason I'm telling you this because it's all links.
Yeah.
I had quite a successful business. I had 7 health clubs. I had a marketing company. Almost 600 staff working for us. I was in the rich list of Northwest of England, age 43. And one night I'm upstairs. There's a knock on the door, and I shouted to the kids. Somebody answered the door. They were playing games and on their iPhones or whatever, iPads. So I go down, open it, and 4 men break into my house and. Wow. They put a knife to my neck, pin me against the wall. The guy's going, I'm going to cut his neck. And they demanded cash. And being a salesman, I said, I don't carry that kind of cash, which I didn't anyway. So just don't harm my family. They said, pay us tomorrow or we'll kill you and your kids. They knew this school that my children went to. They'd been following me at work. Lo and behold, I found out how they knew me. He was one of my franchisees. That's another story. So that evening, I told them to leave. I'll pay them tomorrow. Phoned the police. Within 20 minutes, they got arrested. They even left the fingerprints on the doorbell. But I feared for my children's health, so I flew them to Dubai.
Okay.
And they never went back to that house again.
I'm sure.
And then, the very next day, I got police. I got accompanied by the police, packed my car, drove through UK, France, to my house in southern Spain in 48 hours. You know, and I was just shocked. And I took some sabbatical, came back, and I just didn't want to go to the house, hated England, and I had a heart attack. So, so I had stress of it all, I had a heart attack. And whilst lying in my hospital bed, and I said I had a small chance of living, your heart is divided into a strong side and a weak side. I had a heart attack on my strong side. So I said, you probably won't make it. So I was just lying there looking at this crappy hospital ceiling, and I was like, surely this is not it. Surely this is not it. And it was really weird because I wasn't scared of death, but I didn't want to die alone. So I was crying, tears were running down my eyes, not because I was thinking, okay, this is it, right? But I just thought, I don't want to die alone without my kids. So I just made a decision that I was going to leave Dubai and leave England to be with my kids in Dubai. Wow. So no matter what happens. And then naively, of course I survived. And then naively, I told everyone. And I found buyers for my business. They paid me 10%. They didn't pay the 90. They said, no, sue us. Knowing I said September 2009 is the date I said that I'm going to go to Dubai. So I got gazumped. I lost all my money. The bank came after me. The tax man came after me. I paid everyone. I could have gone bankrupt and saved loads of money. So I end up here, age 43, 44, with $700 in my pocket.
Wow.
But I was happy to be with my kids. So I lived in a maid's room.
You were 43?
Yes.
That's like a proper midlife.
Midlife, yeah. 3 kids, 1 heart attack then. I've had another one since. And then I came here and lived in a maid's room for 6 months. My diet was 2 coffees and a sugar donut a day. I kept getting kicked out of hotel lobbies because I didn't spend any money. I was just using the Wi-Fi. So, and then Starbucks back at Borders, Mall of Emirates, became my office. So I used to sit there in that corner, make cold calls. I'm dyslexic. But I did everything. I even wrote content. Imagine a dyslexic guy writing content.
Yeah, I did anything.
Sold my soul for money. Sold my soul for money. And I just knew if I kept doing the right things every single day, eventually it'll pay off.
That was 2009.
And it was the worst time in the history.
Yeah, it was the crash.
Now, for me, everybody said, you're crazy, right? Yeah. Because it was after Ramadan, the first, and the whole market dipped. But here's the thing. People don't look for solutions if they don't have a headache. So coincidentally, it was a perfect time for me because people had headaches.
So you were solving problems.
I was solving problems. And the bigger the I teach this, the bigger the problem you solve, the more money you earn. So I was sorting big problems. Here's the thing. My mentality was that, who knows me, I'm new to Dubai, so I was charging peanuts. Years later, when I've got track record, I'm doing exactly the same thing. I'm charging 10 times more, and people are willingly paying for it. The only thing that changed was my mindset, my own beliefs.
You started valuing yourself more.
Exactly. Yeah. I could have valued it from day one, but I just thought, well, nobody knows me, I'm new to the country. I made up excuses.
It's a part of the process.
Exactly. So, yeah, and then now we had, last year we had 9 companies. We had 130 staff working for us. We make a lot of money. And then I just decided that I'm going to spend a lot of time contributing. We're an investment house now. Every single month we invest in a company. So people are pitching me all the time. We run the Gladiator Mastery Program. We have an online agency, top 3% Google partners in the whole of MENA region.
That's great.
So thank you. My son runs that, thank God. So, yeah, miracles happen all the time. Miracles, and I'm a walking, talking miracle.
Compare your life now to your life before. In the UK, you were really established, you have lots of money, life was perfect. But were you really content back then, or you feel now you're content, you're happier? Which one?
You know, fact that the sun shines every day makes you happy.
Yeah.
Right? And in the UK, I didn't realize, I'm Iranian born. So although they were, I have a British citizenship and British passport, I never felt like home. I'm a Muslim, and I never felt accepted. So when I came to Dubai, and I went to Iran, and it didn't feel like home either because I've been too westernized. Dubai felt perfect. You know, it's got the Western mentality.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like there's a system, there's law and order. And if you work hard, you're honest, you do well. So Dubai fitted perfectly in my life. But it needed that hit for me to make that change. Otherwise, I was comfortable. And being comfortable is your biggest enemy. You know, my challenge now is to inspire myself to go out there and do things because I'm comfortable. You know, and people like yourself, I had a chat before we started, like, you want to get fitter and healthier and more successful. That drive is a type different. It's easy to go and knock on doors when you can't afford to pay the rent.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a lot harder to get yourself out of bed when you're comfortable.
I'll tell you what was the turning point for me. So basically, when I came, like, literally had nothing. I was even on minus. So I was running 17, 18, 20 hours sometimes a day just to make the money. And I got so focused on making money, I totally neglected and forget my health. So I was getting wealthier, but I was losing my
unhealthy.
Health. I was fat. I was just like, I couldn't breathe. I used to smoke sometimes up to 3 packs a day. After all of that crazy long day, I needed a drink or two to fall asleep. Mm. So then I was like, okay, this cycle is broken. It's a bit stupid. I'm making this money. I'm losing my health. Eventually, I need to spend all of that money on my health, trying to regain it, and I will never regain it.
If you're lucky.
So what's the point?
If you're lucky to have the chance to spend money, because you could just die.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd be the richest man in the graveyard,
like,
right?
What's the point of running to get the money, losing the health, try to regain it, which will never happen. So you know what? Step down, chill, focus on your health, and this is the actual wealth. It's your health. So that's why I changed my mindset. I'm like, okay, instead of me working 16 hours, let me do 8 or 10 by being more productive. Let me start doing meditation, whether I want to do a yoga or just to stay still for 5 minutes or even go do something that gives me a full adrenaline, which is whatever. And this is what changed my mentality. And then I started looking at the food that I'm eating. I'm like, no. This is crap. I need food that will make me sustain. And my turning point was when I quit smoking. It's been 2 years now.
Wow.
After 21 years of heavy smoking, I just quit cold turkey. And I'm like, if I can control this, I can control all of my life. And from then, I've been extremely proud and happy, as we say. Good, I hang up next to smokers now. I don't care.
Yeah.
It was just first months, this constant battle between cigarettes calling you, telling you, we miss you, to keep pushing it away.
To change your habits, isn't it? No, congratulations. I think I remember when I was a child, I used to ask my grandma, said, you know, what's the most important thing? And I was hoping she could say money. She said health. I think health is something you take for granted when you're young.
Correct.
As you're getting older, you start appreciating it more.
Correct.
Because I used to think I was Superman. You know, I used to play professional squash and I used to play football. And I used to jump crazy stuff, two floors of stairs just to show I could roll. Now I can't walk. My knees are giving in. You know, like my advice is look after your knees because they need to look after you when you get older.
They're the most important. Yeah. Correct.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Tell us now, guide us through what's been happening in your gladiator program. I'm asking you about it in specific because I find that there's a lot of people in the city that they've been here for a while or they are new joiners. They come in, they look at the glamorous lifestyle of Dubai, the flashy cars, watches, whatever. And then they were like, we want to do the same. So does your program provide this window or the gateway for people at least to step their foot on this?
You have to have a desire.
Yeah.
Okay, because if you're just copying, I'm sure people have copied you in business. You've had people leave.
I'm flattered. It's okay. It doesn't upset me.
Exactly. And you know, if they're doing it for a wrong reason, they will not make it.
Correct.
True. So you have to have a desire and a passion. So that's very rare in people. So irrespective of geography, those people will never make it. It just happens that those 3-4% who will make it, who prepare to work hard, happen to be in the right time, in the right place, and the right environment, which is Dubai. The whole world is coming here. So if you have the right ingredients and you're prepared to take action, you could really do well. Now, if you don't have the desire and the hunger and you get rejected and you just go home and put your thumb in your mouth and feel sorry for yourself and start blaming the world and a victim, nothing's going to happen to you. So I think with Dubai, everything is magnified. You can do very well quickly. You could lose very quickly. I don't know anybody comes to Dubai to find spirituality or love. People come here to commercially do well. Exactly. You go to India, right? You go somewhere else, or Thailand or something. You come here to commercially do well and go home. So you have to be sharp. You have to be honorable. Because where money goes, unfortunately, lots of people take advantage of other people. If you're honorable and your reputation is that you do good, you have high values, you will do well and deliver on your promises. So Gladiator Mastery, I formed it because I never had anybody. I lost my father when I was 3, lost my grandfather when I was 7. So I never had a male figure teaching me anything. So I say to my mom, I think it was about 14, so how do people get jobs? She goes, I don't know, go and ask someone. You know, there was no internet. So I had to really find everything myself. If I wanted some information, I had
street
to cycle.
Knowledge,
and I also had to, I always worked. So something you have to do, you have to work hard, period. To win the lottery is very rare. Unfortunately, we social media thinks that yes, everyone drives Lamborghinis and billionaire lifestyles. It's very few. And if you actually look deep into it, most of them are rented cars and they don't own those houses or the jets.
So
if you work hard, you do well. If you use your brain, you can do a lot better. So nobody guided me, and I felt like there's this sense of like, world expects, you know, the world owes me. When I wanted to go on dates, you know, I used to dress and find a bar or a club to go to and make an effort to approach someone. Now, you're a swipe to the left and the right. That's why relationships don't last, because there's somebody else waiting. You know, people don't make effort these days. I put a job advert, nobody calls me. They just copy-paste CVs. And from gardeners, accountants for sales, anyone sends just copy-paste. It's just too easy to mass. So I feel if you don't make an effort, you don't appreciate it. So a lot of people here don't have enough desire. They want it all, they're not prepared to give it much. And also, they can't take rejection. They go, I call it the arena of life. Yes. So if you imagine 2,000 years ago, if you were a gladiator and you were going to go to an arena, you do a bit of practicing, wouldn't you?
Definitely. Yeah. Exactly. Like, there was no other option.
Yeah. We 2023, we treat life. It's not like it's life and death. Just like a game. You open a bank account, they say, hey, good luck. 80% go bust in the first year. So they told you're going to lose. Can you imagine you're a gladiator and you say, hey, you're going to go into an arena, 80 of you are going to die. Yeah, it's not a good mental. So I said, what I'll do is I'll create this gladiator mentality, get the defense strategies, offense, everything prepared using my experience. And also, I'm not particularly intelligent. So what I've done is I've simplified everything. So, for instance, I will teach someone how to sit in a room and their sales will increase by 30%. Where to sit in the room. You know, the psychology of everything simplified, so they get to from A to B in a shortest possible way.
This is interesting. I'll tell you a story, but tell me more about what's the difference between the seating? Like if someone sits on the first row, mid or on the back. I know the back one, he has a bit of insecurities, he don't want anyone. But the mid at the front one, what's their story?
Well, that's seminars. Okay. Yeah. First of all, there's lots of things to cover. The ones, if you're doing a seminar, the ones who take the most amount of notes and they are willing to learn are the most successful people. The ones who argue most and challenge you are the poorest. Why? Because the poorest people have a story they tell themselves for their losses and they defend it in a fight for it. The rich people, they've got it, done it, and they're learning. So the mentality of a successful person is constantly learning and growing.
The student mentality.
Exactly.
Which I still have it until
the correct. So you tend to sit in the front because you want to catch as much as you can, right? So that's one. If you imagine 10,000 years ago when we were in caves and you went hunting and your wife and kids were in the cave cooking a fire and stuff, and you bring the animals in, the killed animals, you're sitting in the fire. Do you sit with your back to the cave? You wouldn't, would you?
Of course not.
Because animals are going to come and
try to... You never know where I was coming.
Correct. It's the same. In a meeting, if you want to dominate, you sit facing the door. Okay? In the US, if you're a New York cop, you never sit with your back to the door. You always sit with your back to the wall because you're in power. You know what's coming from behind you. So in a sales meeting, if you imagine you're not aware of where you're sitting and you're having a chat with the person and then he's distracted... We talked about somebody who gets distracted all the time, right? And in that person's office, I don't sit, let him be facing the door. I move my table, there, my chair, so we're both facing the door. So I'm in control of who comes and goes. Mm. And I say, just deal with that and I'll just wait for you to finish, right?
Yeah.
So I can dominate the meeting because of where I'm sitting. But if you're there, you're trying to get the guy's attention or lady's attention, you try to sell the product and they're distracted all the time. And that's disrespectful. So I teach people where to sit in the room. I teach people how to bring the conversation back on track so they don't go west. So I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely. Yeah. Tell me more about this main question is like when someone joins any industry, so you tell them, what do you want to take out of it? People are like, oh, I don't know, I'm just here to make money. Okay, great, how much? I don't know. I'm like, okay, how do you teach people or actually to inspire people how to set up their goals?
Amazing. You only hire inspired people already. If you're taking your time to inspire and motivate people, they're the wrong people.
No, I didn't say this. I'm saying like people hate their life.
Yes.
They acknowledge that they are in the wrong place and they want to change it, which is an amazing start.
Yes.
But they don't know how to set up goals. They don't know what they want to take from life. For example, when I get people coming to me like, I want to join real estate. I'm like, amazing. Why? For money. I'm like, obviously. How much? Like,
they don't know.
$100,000. Like, really? Mm-hmm. You're going to get beaten up every day, left and right, lied to. People will not turn up to their meetings. People will even block you. People will talk shit to you. $100,000, they're like, okay, $200,000. I'm like, buddy, put your goal at 10 million. Yeah. If you achieve 10% from it, happy days.
Yes.
So then they were like, oh, yeah, I'm thinking too small. I need to think bigger.
Yeah.
Now I'm telling you, not in our industry, people coming to you in general for any sale job or whatever.
Yes.
How do you tell them that you are worthy of something big? Okay. You need to divide your time. Okay, you're going to do this for 5 years. So your day will be... Yeah. This much income, or your hour should be worth $2,000-$3,000. Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
There's two questions I ask them. One is, what are you going to do with that money?
Yeah.
Okay. If you don't have a purpose with it, then I won't hire them. Okay. Because money doesn't make you happy, right? Second thing is, what are you going to give in return? Right. So everybody wants money. So what I have to, I've put in place a 7-step recruitment process whereby I catch people to see if they have genuine desire within. Are they motivated within? And what you find, something like a single mom, totally motivated because they have somebody else to feed, somebody who sends money home. They have parents to, you know, they're the ones you want to hire because they go home, they're inspired, they read books, they study. If somebody just doing for the money, I wouldn't hire them in the first place, you know, and because that desire doesn't last long. If you have to keep telling them to set higher goals, if they are already inspired and motivated, all my staff have vision boards. Even my driver has a vision board. My receptionist has a vision board.
So they put what? The bank account, they put their dream house, they put the car,
every
the vacations.
One of them. Correct.
Yeah.
So it aligns them every single day to as to why they're coming. Now, if somebody says, I'm looking for a job, I'm looking for work, I actually wouldn't hire them. I'm very sensitive towards what they say. If they're looking for an opportunity, I look at them. Because it's the opportunity to grow. If somebody says, I want this, I want that, I'm not interested. Okay, what are you going to put? It's all about offering value. Would you agree? Whoever offers more value earns most amount of money.
I want to take you to one of my companies.
Please.
The Holiday Homes company.
Please.
They're all kids.
Yes.
20 to 24 years old. No experience, zero.
Mm-hmm.
What I found mutual in all of them, they want to make someone of their lives. So I'm like, I don't want to read CV. Anyway, you don't have a CV. You better finish school.
Exactly.
Come over. I'm going to give you this training. And now, happily, after 4 years, I'm running the third biggest holiday homes company in the country.
Amazing.
My number one and number two competitor has been there for 8 years and 12 years, which I'm coming for them in the next quarter. Regardless, if people see my team, they were like, really? You're doing all of this with kids?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah. They're even better than the advanced or experienced people.
Yeah.
Because those ones, it's super hard to unlearn them what they know.
Yeah, and
they
blank recordings. Yeah,
yeah.
You, what you teach them is fresh.
Correct. Yes. Like these guys, they still have the sponge mind. Whatever you give them, they love it, they take it, they understand it, and they implement
it. What you probably find is that most of them, their upbringing is very similar. What you find is that positive people always see the glass full.
Yeah.
Negative people see it half empty.
Yeah.
So you probably have hired the right people, and together they're very, very strong as a team.
You might call me crazy. I hire based on energy.
Mm-hmm.
I never read a CV. For me, any guy can do a CV.
Well, CVs are lies.
What grabs my attention sometimes, if someone just send me a voice note or a video. Video is even better. Seeing is believing. Random person sending me, hey, Anthony, I love what you're doing. I don't have experience in life, but you know what? I have the same hunger. I want to join you. I'm not come over for a meeting. Definitely. Someone send me a CV, to be very honest, I'm sorry to say it, I just send it to archive or just immediately. I don't even open it. I don't bother.
Yes.
So when I sit with this person, like, what kind of vibe I'm picking from them? If they're shaking, like too shaking, I'm like, But if someone is like telling me in my face, I don't know anything, but give me 60 days, I'm going to make
I'll show you.
I would love to have them on board.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. It's just that want, isn't it? You're looking. Life is energy, right? We're all bundles of energy. Money is energy. The energy you send out there, you attract. So
correct.
That's how you feel. So what's happened is, from my opinion, your aerial is very sensitive to energy. Is it possible that maybe you were brought up around a lot of women? I was brought up around a lot of women because I didn't have a father or a grandfather.
Yeah.
So I'm very sensitive to energy.
Yeah.
You know, women have this thing called sixth sense, right? And they're often right,
despite how
we argue with
always.
Them, right? Yeah. So people who've been around ladies or women or mothers close, they tend to be very sensitive towards that sixth sense. So I'm very, very. If somebody walks into a business, I can pick up how they're feeling about the business when they walk. It's the energy.
Yeah. Tell me about social media. How did social media interfere in our lives? Do you think it's a plus, it's a minus, in business and in society in general? What's going on in the world? All of these flags we're seeing nowadays.
Well, social media has changed my life for the better. I have, I think, 500,000 Facebook, 500,000 Instagram. What happened is I've realized that 5-6 years ago, people used to come and say, well, what do you do? Right? And I had to justify.
Yeah.
And now they come and say, can I afford you? Because I have a strong foothold in the social media platform. I have 2,000 videos. So people suddenly, their perception of me is, I'm still the same person, but the perception of me has changed. So that's been really good. To be successful on social media, you've got to be consistent. You've got to keep adding value. Don't be selfish. Don't think, I'll hold back. Just don't. You know, people still want to connect with you. They still want to come to your seminars, read your books, right? So keep giving. Keep giving. I think before, we were dictated by the publicists. The actors and the actresses and the kings and the queens used to mess around, and we never knew. They just gave the publicist something. They sent it to the press. We believed it. Now, we can tap into their lives every single day. There is no filter anymore.
All right.
So I like it. I like it because we get a sense of reality. The BS that people believe has always been there.
It's a different format now.
It's a different format. Imagine
so many information.
And it's fast, right? So imagine you're a king of Great Britain and then you lose a battle in Australia. Take you 6 months to find out what happened.
Yeah.
True. By the time the guest gets on a ship and comes out, we lost the battle. Yeah. Everything was slow. Now it's fast. You know, you can utilize and hit the masses as quickly as possible and gain great wealth, right? But you have to have the right values. You have to keep caring. Also, you have to share your vulnerability. You and I share our vulnerability. We don't mind talking about coming here with nothing and stuff like this, right? Your vulnerability on social media is your strength.
Actually, I feel proud of it. And I'm just saying, like, if I made it, anyone can make it. Like, I'm from a broken family. Parents got divorced since I was 8. Mm-hmm. By the age of 13, I was living wild, lost between parties, women, and whatever comes with it.
Poor you.
I'm like,
I already feel sorry for you.
No need
I'm
to
just
feel
joking.
Sorry.
I'm just joking. Lots
but
of
I
women
mean,
and
I really
parties.
went south in life. I reached a point where nothing meant anything for me. I didn't value money, didn't value friendship. I was like, and then I just got slapped in the face, and I'm like, but it cannot be that silly, you know. I need to travel.
What was the slap? What happened?
The slap was when I felt that I'm living with no purpose, with nothing. I just party every night until 5, 6 a.m., come back home, pass out until 2, 3 p.m., wake up feeling tired, feeling, I don't know, miserable, and then wake up, do the same all over day by day, and years has passed, and I'm like, no, there must be something different to life. But I acknowledge that what I am at, it wasn't my country's fault, it wasn't my parents' fault, it wasn't anyone's fault except me. And I'm like, this, I can do it for the rest of my life. However, let me see what's on the other side. And when I traveled and when I came here, I remember the first day, I felt I'm nothing.
When did you arrive?
Look how glorious this is.
What year was this?
That was October 2014, 23rd of October 2014.
Amazing.
And I'm like, I'm nothing, man. Like, even if I die in this second, no one would even know. No one would even recognize this. Look at this glorious stuff. Look how big this city is. Like, look about the vibe. And then I went to a 90 days of constant beating. Like, whatever I was trying, it wasn't working. I would join the real estate. No matter who I was calling, barely talking to me. Even when people were arranging meetings to come see me, people don't know that. But back then, I didn't have a car. I couldn't even afford a taxi. So I had to walk 7 kilometers to reach the metro and then to take the metro to that destination. So if my meeting was at 5 p.m., I had to leave the office by 2:30 to reach at 5. And some people never showed up. And then I called them, like, are you on the way? They were like, who's this? Like, motherfucker, who's this? You know how much effort I put to be in here? And we're like, oh no, we took another flat, hang up. So that rejection and beating on a daily basis, it got me to a place I'm like, okay, literally I have nothing now. I don't even have money to eat. So I have two options. Either I'm going to keep fighting or just go pick up a building, jump from it. There was no other option, you know? And then bit by bit, I built that momentum. I got my first 2,000 dirhams. I'm like, yay, I'm the don now. Then from then, I started getting money. 9 months later, I got my first studio, 300 square feet that felt like a proper mansion. I got driving license. I rented my first Hyundai, whatever it was. So it was a move from the metro. And from there, I started building. And I'm like, okay, these days, as shit as they were, I appreciate them, but I'm never coming there. So this was keep me moving every day. It's like just keep going so I can never go back to that stage, which I really appreciate, but I'm telling you, the start was really tough. So yeah, I don't mind saying it, because when someone comes to me and say life is tough, I'm like, do you have a house? Like, yeah. I'm like, do you have a car? Like, yeah. I'm like, chill, man, chill. You have a roof, chill. We started differently. We came in differently. Even now, the brokers, when they come to me and telling me how tough it is to find a client, I'm like, buddy. Back then, in 2015 and 16, if we had a guy who wanted to buy a studio, we used to work for 30 days to get it done, and we used to make 2,000-3,000 dirhams. Now you blindly is making 100,000, 200,000 without doing any effort. So trust me, it's not hard at all. Yeah.
Wake up, smell the roses. People are motivated. You said a lot of interesting stuff. If I may tap into a few.
Please.
People are motivated in two ways. One is to have pleasure. So they're driven by their goals. Some people are motivated by never wanting to go back to the pain. So you're driven, you mentioned it, that the fact that you never want to have that pain. You choose rich more than poor any day,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be poor.
100%.
Again. So what you find is that if you can have goals, and you want to run away from your pain, you become doubly successful. So you love great things in life, and you remember the pain of the past. That's why you're doubly successful. What you'll find is people who haven't had pain, they're just going towards their goals, they're a little bit wishy-washy. They're not as driven as somebody who's had
pain.
And
they might lose it very quick. Because I found out after experience that making it, it's not the hardest part. It's hard, but it's not the hardest. The hardest is maintaining and scaling from there. And this is the hardest part. Just like not to get your ego, get control of you, and not to start feeling that you're something so big and everyone else is a moron. No. Yeah. If you manage to get yourself that, the richer you get, the more humble you become, that's the best formula.
You know, it's to be successful, you need a balance of humbleness and ego. If you're too humble, you get walked all over. You're going
to
take advantage.
What I'm saying, humble, is like when a stranger come to you and try to talk to you.
Yes,
give them this 2 minutes.
Correct.
If you make him smile, you just change a part of his day.
Yes, yes.
Not just like a please stay away from me. This is what I mean by
yes. That other side is too much is arrogance.
Yeah.
So there's no empathy. Real successful people have a balance of empathy and ego. So they're very nice and humble, yet they have to have the ego to hold the meeting, do the big deals. Yes.
I agree with that. Tell me now about your relationship with your kids.
Ooh, thank God you didn't ask the wife.
I need to tap a bit about the
no. Just say, no, that is good anyway. Before leaving, thank God I have 4 kids. A beautiful 3
God
boys
bless.
And a girl, thank you. My son and daughter, 29, 28, success millionaires in their own right. And I think the reason for that is that I never had love in my life. So what I decided to, as a child, that if I was going to have children, I was going to give them unlimited amount of love. So my 29-year-old, when I see him, he's a big guy, bigger than me. I kiss him on his lips, on his head, on his face. I kiss his hands, you know, and what you find is somebody, the reason most people, I think, ultimately it's about love. Everything ultimately is about love and connection. So you do all that to be loved back, to achieve things, to be loved by a partner, your parents, acceptance, so on. So if you bring up children who their cups are full of love, they never get into shitty relationships. Most people get into shitty relationships because they're looking at somebody else to fill their cup.
Correct.
So thank goodness. I don't know about my other 2, 15 and 8. See how they go. Because they've had a different life. They've had a life of luxury. They fly first or business class. They go to Maldives. My first children didn't have that. They saw that. They didn't go to school for 6 months. So they've seen what pain can be, right? So thank goodness they're good. Their relationship is really close. Can't get rid of them. They come home and never leave. I'm like, go, you know, because the cups are full. Yeah, they get unlimited amounts of love. No matter, can you imagine, no matter what time you come home, you're going to get love. No matter when you wake up or go to bed, you're going to get love. Can you imagine that consistency? I never had that.
Me too.
I always thought I wasn't good enough, I wasn't this, and I was aspiring to get a nugget of love, a little tiny drop of it. And how many shitty relationships I got into because they just gave me a little bit of acceptance.
But do you regret something that you went through?
If Dariush's brain was another human being and he was put here, he should be locked up for abuse. Because most of us, the internal dialogue, the conversations we have are, you know, like the words you use was blame, right? You idiot, you effing this. And it's very abusive. You know, I just think we got to be nicer to ourselves, right? So because of my conditioning of my mother, who was very abusive, I don't have a very healthy dialogue with myself. So I'm never happy, never good enough, never. I've still got this childlike want to aspire to do better, if that makes sense.
Makes sense, but I just want to break this question into two parts. So when I say, do you have any regrets, I mean like from your upbringing until today, until your decisions, until your divorce, until how you love your kids, this made you the person who you are today. Mm. Whether you like it or not, you are a very successful person. Okay. Whether you tell yourself that I did a great job or I'm not good enough, people see you differently. Mm-hmm. So maybe you are your own worst enemy, but absolutely, for people you are an inspiration.
Yes.
That's the first part. The second part, when I say regrets, I'm telling you about that. If you have this chance to go back in life 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, would you change something?
Yes.
What?
I would never have lied. I would never have cheated. I would never have taken advantage. I would have been more careful about other people's feelings. Without realizing or not having enough emotional intelligence or being selfish, I hurt too many people that I shouldn't have
done. Unintentionally, sure.
Always unintentionally.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was always a decent human being. But you can do things without thinking about other people's feelings, just being self-centered. Those are the only things I would have probably changed.
So that was the selfish, Darius, by acting without thinking of others?
You know, I'm still selfish. You know, this is what I say. If I can inspire 1 million people and each one of them pay me $1 a month, I'll become a multimillionaire, right? So by being selfish, I'm giving, if that makes sense. You have to be selfish in a way. Just not being aware of the pain you may be causing through your actions is what I would have changed. Yes. Or maybe being a bit more understanding of other people's upbringing to make them behave the way. Maybe because I was very angry. I still am angry inside, but it's subdued a lot. 2 heart attacks.
You're angry from what?
Didn't have a childhood. You know, it's interesting you say that. I didn't realize. I always thought my dad was my hero. He died 29 of a heart attack, right? And then you realize later on that I went on courses and I realized how much anger I had for him for leaving me as a child. You know, it was anger, like, why the fuck did you leave me as a child not to have you picking me up? You know, I didn't have a father figure to guide me. So that I was angry. And so I never really consciously thought. So God help someone in my 20s if they cross my path in a traffic light. You know, I'll kill them. I was locked up so many times in England to calm down. I'm sitting with a suit in a jail for about 5 hours. Police just wanted me to calm down. And I couldn't understand why. And so what I started doing is I started using that anger towards and diverting towards sales, towards business, and not just physical, you know,
altercations. You know, we have the same story. So it's just like my dad also was my first inspiration in life. And down the line, I just found out that what he was doing and showing me as a kid wasn't healthy for a child at all.
Yes.
And maybe back then I didn't feel that it was hurting me anyway, but it was always
difference.
In my subconscious.
You didn't know the difference then, yes.
It was always in my subconscious. And down the line, when I became, let's say, 25, 26, something, we started me and him beefing a lot. And I always said that I wouldn't do, if one day I get a child, I wouldn't do to them what you're doing to me. And then I had this anger on him. And then I felt this, I need just to be separated from this person. I don't want to see him later on. And he passed away in 2019, God rest his soul. Sorry. And I still got my anger on him until I'm like, you know what? In order for me to live, I need to let go of my past. Whether I agree that I should forgive him or not, I need to forgive him so I can let him lose free in peace and I can let my life live in peace. And this is what I have done now. And from my second book, which is coming, I was telling you about, I dedicated the book to him.
Wow.
And I said, I love you, I forgive you, and I hope that I'm making you proud of the person who I am. And mentally, I told myself, this is how much he knew, or this is how he felt he should live. Instead of me pointing fingers and saying, you were not good enough with me, you become a better man, whether you have a kids or not.
Yes.
So that's what I wanted to tell you, this message, that you cannot live with anger. You cannot live with the hate. Even if people don't deserve it, whether they're family, blood, friends, cousin, whatever, forgive them, because you deserve better than... You deserve to remove the weight from your shoulder.
You're absolutely... What a beautiful story, by the way. Thank you for sharing it. And on the grand scale of things, we're all going to die anyway. So what does it matter, right? And I say to people is that we've all had a past. Remember, don't forget it. But don't live in it.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that when you live in the past, which I did in the past too much, I felt the misery and the anger and the sadness. Okay. So now I can't, you can't forget your past, but you don't have to live in those emotions. So that's what I'm dancing a lot more with my past.
Yeah. I mean, like, before. The brain has so many stages where you can bury it in it.
Correct.
You can.
At the same time, you get triggers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're going along and somebody says something that it triggers some word that was used before, and it can, and then you have to know how to manage that trigger, the response to that trigger.
Yeah.
That comes again with
age. Have you ever thought of therapy? Hypnosis or...
All of it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And nothing worked.
What do you mean nothing? I'm perfectly okay.
No, you are. that's the jab effect. Yeah,
I'm perfectly okay, yes. No, of course I have. No,
and I'm asking you this because I'm thinking of it myself.
Yes.
Because now I'm finding, like, maybe we are too, idols, that we cannot share some stuff, but we can totally share it with a stranger.
After this session, podcast, yeah. I will give you a name of where to go.
I'm going for Marissa Pierce, no one else.
I will send you somewhere else. If I may share, it's called the Hoffman Institute.
Okay.
Hoffman Institute, it's created by Dr. Hoffman in the 70s, and they have these courses all over the world. And I've sent 20 of my students over the last 10 years. One of them was the CEO of Renault, and it's changed their lives. Every single one has changed their lives. Because what happens is, we have, for instance... God rest his soul, your father passed away. You have so much unsaid conversations. Okay, so you need to empty that. You have so much emotions going on, you need to empty that. You have so much dialogue going on, empty it. So physical, Hoffman, I'm not going to share too much. In 8 days, you empty yourself. So the best way I can describe it is that you come out, no phones, no connection with the outside world. And then you come out and the sky is bluer. The trees greener, and you can see the butterfly in the trees. What happens is, you and I, we're probably going to go to our car. We won't even notice the trees. It's just green things, and we won't look at the sky. So after the Hoffman, what happens is you get the purity of a child back. So what they often say is for 2-3 days, go to a spa, don't connect with the outside world, just ease yourself back into society. So I've been to Tony, I'm a Tony Robbins coach, Deepak Chopra, everyone that level. Hoffman is that deep. Incredible. So I would highly recommend Hoffman Institute.
Definitely. Appreciate that. Tell me...
By the way, everybody needs continuous growth. So I'm constantly on courses. It never stops.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you have the student mentality...
Exactly.
You are in a great position.
Nobody's ever perfect.
I still, believe it or not, I still... Like, my monthly target is to read 4 books. I will never skip it. This is my top priority over any party, any going out, any whatever. I have to do my 4 books. I have to listen to podcasts. Even though I do podcasts,
amazing.
I also listen to podcasts.
Amazing.
I like to sit with different people and learn from them whether they are in a great position in life or not. Because also, you have a lot to learn from the poor. The poor is a human being, but he decided that his interest in life is different.
Correct.
So I love sitting with them. I love talking to them. And my most important part is just like to suck and grab as much information as possible and to give it back to people in a different wording.
Beautiful.
Because lots of people, they don't enjoy, let's say, listening to a podcast, or some people hate reading books. So once you are sharing it in a conversation, you are tapping into their life.
The way you tell the story connects to their heart. And like we're discussing earlier, like, you don't want some whether he's shouting and swearing, or maybe that you can't resonate with that.
Yeah.
But the way you put it together, like, I'm so excited to read your book. Honestly, I cannot wait to read your book.
Thank you. Really, I'm really sure you're going to finish it in 2 hours.
I can't wait. But I am dyslexic, so make that 2 days.
Yeah.
I have to read the same chapter 10 times. But yeah, you've got to constantly be learning. You're never perfect. You're never by any means. And the more you learn, the more you want to learn. The more you realize you don't know anything. You know? And we living in a world of fast change. So exciting.
AI coming. Something,
yeah. AI, new medicine, AI technology, 3D printing. Incredible stuff's happening.
What's your intake on AI? Are you excited for it? You're worried from it? I don't know. I keep
The ultimate thing is, when a machine decides that we are no use to the planet, they could kill us, right? Because right now, a machine can decide to down all the planes on the planet, right? So that's the worrying part. You don't know how many companies are out there doing research on AI that we're not aware of. There's got to be some kind of control or policing. I believe right now, this is true, is that there is a machine. Maybe I shouldn't mention the name of the company, that is AI machine, that when they switch it off, it switches itself back on again.
The problem, if it knows how to code itself.
Exactly.
Yeah, and when this goes into military, that's when it's going to lose control.
So, but human beings are shitting in the planet. They're going to destroy, they're killing each other. Well, just get rid of them all and have a planet of dinosaurs. I mean, 50 million years, it'd be just like Terminator.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like the Terminator. Yeah, that's how it happened.
Why do we need human beings? Yes, why do we need human beings? We are pretty useless creatures, really. You know, and the funny thing is that this aspiring to have lots of things and greed and stuff is not our natural state. Our natural state is survival. Because we used to chase the weather and plant seeds and chase. We're hunters and gatherers, right? This business of having your apartment, having your home, flying here and there, it's not natural to us. Our history of 10,000 years is desperation, right? So now we're confused, like men are confused. Right, this is Me Too movement, and women have equality. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but men are lost their way. Now that's why people like Andrew Tate are doing very well, because they're men saying, "Give me some direction, give me my masculinity back." Does that make sense? There's lots of confusion happening right now in our time.
Do you think the internet had to play mega role in it?
Yeah, amazing.
And the impact. So when people misuse the internet, what they're seeing, their subconscious, everyone started wanting stuff that they don't want it, to be very honest.
Do you know, can I ask you a question? Do you think war started by misinformation?
No,
always.
The war started from the start of the humans.
Correct.
Who will conquer? Who's going to take the spot?
Exactly. They lied to their soldiers. Yeah. They cheated. They raped and pillaged. And, you know, so shit has been going on since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
Now it's just more accessible.
But what I believe, Ed, that because they didn't have the option back then to see what's on the other side, life was more sustainable. Like, for example, now look at any marriage. It's so vulnerable, one beef can get to a divorce. Like, it wasn't like that before.
But at the same time, people were in miserable marriages, right? So what you
as
find...
As arranged marriages?
No, even like, I'm a man, you do this. And it was very much male chauvinistic world before. Yeah. And it was okay for the man to have... Henry VIII chopped his wife's heads off because he wanted to marry other women.
Yeah.
It's not acceptable. Does
that make
sense? It chopped it and found reasons for him to be the head chopped off. It was no divorce. I'd rather have divorce than chopping heads off, right? So I think I believe in the human being. I believe in the human race. When I was a kid, they were talking about there will be no oil left. There's not enough soil on the planet to serve us with food.
Correct.
We've created fertilizers that can regenerate Earth 10 times faster. We've found different ways of getting oil. Human beings are incredible creatures. Like Elon Musk, we will be on Mars. We need people like him, visionaries. Yes, we will be on Mars. Unfortunately, capitalism can be overly abused, right? So we just got to be balanced. I think with internet, we just see it more. Before, it was happening all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the rich they were having the most filthy, disgusting lives. Look at the church, right? Richest bank in the world. I'm not saying anything about religion.
No, you should.
It just happens. You know, it's the richest bank in the world. They do you know that the church helped the Nazis leave Germany to go to South America? The Catholic Church. Seriously, it's facts, right? Under the religious thing, you know that religion can be taken well, and it can be wars can start on religion. We have the power through more knowledge to make our decisions wiser.
100%. Even like recently, like I think last year, I was in the Vatican, and even though it's a beautiful, glorious place, and then I start thinking, I was talking with some people, like, you know, it's the biggest data collection on the planet.
Yes.
The Vatican. Every single soul being born.
It's the biggest landowner on the planet.
Yeah.
Yes. They have all the prime spots. Now they're not making as much money because the people aren't coming to church and giving out donations anymore. Second is McDonald's. It's church and then McDonald's.
Yeah.
Because they're in all the prime spots on the planet, right? So, yeah, the landlords, the debt collectors.
That got me thinking. I'm like, they are not practicing what they preach at all. Zero. Like, maybe one plot can feed millions or whatever. So what I'm trying to see is, like, they use religion to either unify or to separate people.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like a psychological method, way more than it's a belief. And this is why, like, now, even though I have very strong faith, but it's not a human at all. There is no human on the planet I can say this represents God.
Correct.
Because if you represent God, show me the love and the empathy and that you're changing life.
Correct.
Rather than you being frosted in gold and diamond and have the best cars. Why do they need 30, 40 cooks?
Yes.
God, that's too much.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that's why, like, I kind of lost my belief in humans who are trying to present God in any way. And I just believe in religion itself. And I even believe in practicing. Like, for me, it doesn't matter if you pray one time, three times, five times, or 10 times a day. How you treat people, this is religion.
Absolutely.
By you being a decent person, by you giving back to society, by you doing stuff, this will tell me if you're a man of God or not.
Absolutely. I think what makes us different to animals is that we have the power of choice, right? And God's within us. God's here, right? So we do the right things. You have to, you're the one who's got to look in the mirror and have a conversation with yourself, right? Where are your values? Where is your God? Where is your energy? Where is your spiritual leadership? Definitely. Well, I think to follow any religion blindly is wrong.
Correct.
Okay, I went to my dad's grave 18 years ago in Iran, and there was a mullah sitting there, and he was saying prayers to people, right? And somebody will come and give me, I don't know, the currency was 1,000 riyals or whatever, and he'll take it, say, what's the name of your brother? Ali, okay, whatever, Ali. And then somebody else will come and say, here's 1,000, Hussein. So he'll do the Hussein, right? And then some woman came and said, my son died, and I only have 500 riyals, so go away, I'm not going to pray for him. You know, and he had a bunch of cash under his leg because his entry level for prayers was 1,000 whatever currency. I'm like, what is this?
It's a proper business model.
It's a business. And then we went to his grave, and the grave cleaners waiting. The moment you come, they run with the water and the thing to clean it and they'd cash it. I'm like, everything is a business. End of the day, we come to this fucking world on our own. We live on our own. Do the best you can in the short window of time you have. And my grandma died when she was 92. And I said to her, you know, last time I saw her, I said, tell me about life. She goes, it's short. Life is so short. And I have the Quran, her Quran, when she actually saw the Tsar of Russia on horseback going through her village.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And then she couldn't read or write, but she could read the Quran. And her tears, my great-grandfather used to beat her up, and she used to cry on the Quran, and her tears are in the Quran that I have from her still.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Darius, we cannot get enough from you. This has been really amazing. I'm going to put all of your credentials, if you don't mind, on for viewers to see it, to follow you on YouTube, on Instagram, even to subscribe to your model.
Thank you.
My last question will be, it's not even a question, it's like, let's say your kids are going to be looking at this podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, whatever, after 10 years. Which kind of message you would like to leave them?
Amazing question. 15 years ago, when I was in Iran, I turned up in a town, city called Qom. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a religious city. And about 50 people turned up to see me. And I didn't know what the hell. They said, these people are here as a sign of respect to your grandfather. Because my grandfather was a mayor of that city. And that's the time I thought, I'm going to have a legacy. I thought, if these people who don't know me come to shake my hand because of what my grandfather did to their grandparents, what a way to leave a legacy. So I want them to realize, so the reason I'm doing this first is to leave a legacy for my great-great-grandkids. So, because my name is Saudi. Saud in Arabic means going up, right? Yeah. So I couldn't really go down in life. You know, your name represents it. So I thought to myself, how can I leave a legacy for my children? So a great question is that we're all human. We all have ups, downs. Dance with life. Don't blame. Don't be a victim. Take full responsibility. And you never know when it's going to end. Yes, and just have the biggest fucking fun you can have, because life's too short.
You heard that. That's for his kids, and that's for everyone else. It's great advice. Thanks a lot for watching this episode. See you on the next one.